Hello, it's so good to have you with us here at Leadership for Sustainability. This is the podcast where we help you lead on sustainability to deliver results and make a real difference in the world. I'm Osbert Lancaster, longtime sustainability consultant and trainer, and co-founder of Realize Earth.
These next 10 years are probably the most, I don't want to be too grand, but probably the most important in human history, right? Like, you know, this, what we do now is going to determine the future of our planet. Like, how lucky are we that we get to work in this point in time and to focus on the things we get to focus on?
Really inspiring words there. And what I found even more inspiring was the way Kate is leading real change, not just in her own organisation, but across the whole sector. Kate Wallace-Lockhart is Head of Sustainability with SSE Renewables. As she says, it's easy to think that renewable equals green, equals good, equals sustainable, but it's much more complicated than that. In this episode, she talks about how she and others across the industry are working to create a circular economy to break the link between business growth and resource use. I asked Kate to start by giving us a bit of context about SSE Renewables and her role in the business.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. And yes, I'm Head of Sustainability for SSE Renewables. So SSE overall is an energy company headquartered in Perth in Scotland and involved in lots of different parts of the energy system. So we have the transmission networks in the north of Scotland, the distribution networks in North Scotland and Southern England. We've got thermal power generation across the UK and Ireland. So some of the most efficient CCGT plants on the planet at the moment. So our favourite fact is we're building more offshore wind than any other organisation in the world at the moment as SSE Renewables, including the world's largest offshore wind farm, which is just off the northeast coast in England. So yeah, it's a very exciting company to be part of. And just last year, we put sustainability right at the core of our business strategy.
That's something I think is really fascinating, because I guess one sort of instinctive response is like, well, you know, renewable company, that's low carbon, that's a good thing. Well, what else is there to worry about? I mean, okay, the birds flying into the turbines and that, you know, visual impact and stuff. But apart from where does sustainability fit into all of this?
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question. And I think that maybe there is a temptation to just think renewables equals green equals good equals sustainable. And it is a lot more complex than that. So if we're thinking about how we build out renewables, then there are lots of things that we should be thinking about from a sustainability perspective in its widest sense. And really, that's what my job is and what my team's job is too. So I just joined SSE Renewables last year and have been building the team out since then. But I've been within the wider SSE company for 10 years now. But we're looking at all different parts of sustainability. So we've got someone that's looking at climate and carbon. So what, you know, if we think about our carbon emissions as an organization, what's our business carbon footprint? How do we tackle supply chain emissions? If we think about turbines and embodied carbon within steel and concrete, which make up a large proportion of our turbines, then how are we going to decarbonize them over time, which will be absolutely critical to net zero? If we're thinking about the way, you know, right now we can really see the severe consequences of the changes and weather, and what does that mean as an organization? So what are we doing around climate mitigation, adaptation? If we think about our social impacts, what are we doing around a fair and just transition? How are we working with communities and ensuring good work practices? So there's all these different elements, and let alone, you know, things like biodiversity or circularity, which I'm sure we're going to get onto as well. There are loads of different elements. It's really, how do we transition to net zero and build out the renewables we need in a way that respects our planetary boundaries and the natural world?
So what's got you most sort of excited or fired up about sustainability recently?
I think I just feel like it's the exact right time to change things. I mean, you know, the best time to change it probably would have been a good while ago. But in the absence of that, you know, right now we're in a moment where people are kind of starting to properly wake up to what needs to happen. And actually, we've got the power to influence and change it. And for me, renewables is one of the most important industries moving forward. And these next 10 years are probably the most, I don't want to be too grand, but probably the most important human history, right? Like, you know, this, what we do now is going to determine the future of our planet. Like, how lucky are we that we get to work in this point in time and to focus on the things we get to focus on?
Absolutely. I sometimes think it's, you know, this sort of the time we're in at the moment is so exciting just because of that, you know, but at the same time, I wish we'd done, you know, we'd had this level of energy and enthusiasm 25 years ago. Yeah, when the challenges would have been so much less.
Totally.
Our energy consumption was so much lower at that time, and so all sorts of things, but we are where we are. So you've been working in this field for a while in, you know, different guises, but so over that period, is there a particular moment, particular project you're sort of particularly proud of?
I actually think the example would be what we're doing now as an industry around circular economy. So for us, when we're thinking about our sustainability strategy, what we want to achieve is essentially breaking that bond between the growth of our business, the growth of renewables, with resource use, amongst other things, and we want, you know, positive impacts as well. But that dependency that we have now on more growth equals more consumption, that, you know, we have one planet with finite resources, right? That's not going to work. So we need to think differently. We need to move away from a linear model for the economy and towards one that is genuinely circular. So one of the first things I did actually when I joined SC Renewables was we signed a memorandum of understanding with a small company based in Loch Gilped called Renewable Parts Limited, who offer circular solutions for minor component parts. We've been working with them for a while, so we signed an agreement with Renewable Parts and with Strathclyde University. And really what that said was, it was a bit of a stake in the ground to say, look, we're serious about this. This is what we're going to focus on right now. And what it committed us to was three things. So the first was that we would increase the circularity of our in-service operational fleet. So we've got about 2 gigawatts right now of onshore operations across the UK and Ireland.
By fleet in this context, you mean turbines?
Onshore wind turbines. So we've currently got 1,068 turbines in operation that we're responsible for. So we said that we would work systematically to increase circularity of our minor component parts, that we'd think about, when a turbine gets to the end of its life, then how do we actually start to build in sustainability into the decision-making process for what happens, whether that's repowering or decommissioning or life extension. And then the third element was that what we said was essentially Renewable Parts is a wonderful company. They're brilliant, innovative, creative thinkers that just, you know, if all companies worked like Renewable Parts, then we'd have a fairly different looking economy. But essentially what we said is they're one company and they can't offer everything that we need. And actually the size of the prize here is massive for the UK and for Scotland. Actually, if we start to build a supply chain that can offer the circular solutions that we want to see within our wind farms, then we can, you know, we can grow a whole new sector that can offer something new and different, and not just to the UK and Scotland, but to other countries too. So what we've done is we've been working for the last year or so to set up something called the Coalition for Wind Industry Circularity. So that's called CWIC for short. But essentially what CWIC does is setting up that whole new industry for the UK. So what we're looking to do is to bring together our direct competitors big renewables developers to build it, to bring in the OEMs. So, you know, you've got your big turbine suppliers like Vestas, GE Renewables, Siemens Gamesa, but you've got other ones too. But also thinking about, okay, well, what about smaller companies that want to get into this space but aren't sure how to, or aren't sure, you know, what their offering would be? And then also getting, you know, trade bodies like Scottish Renewables in, getting academics involved and all these, and NGOs, all these different perspectives to come together and say, we're all trying to achieve the same thing, so let's actually do it together. So that's what we've been doing. We launched CWIC officially at the end of March this year at a relatively big event actually in Glasgow. I think it probably ended up bigger than we expected. And then what we've been doing now is really trying to recruit people to join us and make this happen. So, you know, in those few months since March, we've had over 40 organizations sign up to join us and to be part of making this change happen. And I think, you know, if you look at that, it's pretty rare that, I guess, the private sector and academia off their own back comes together to build something brand new because they want to be sustainable and they think there's economic, environmental and social value from doing so, but it's happening, right? So we've got, you know, we gladly have our direct competitors working with us. And that's, I don't know, I think that's probably why I'm most proud of it, because from my perspective in sustainability, I think one of the things that frustrates me the most is this idea that there's some competitive advantage in the quantification or doing these things all separately and in our own little black boxes, when actually, you know, if we all work together, there's like, we can grow the pie and there's plenty to go around, yeah, but we need to actually work together. And until that happens and we start focusing on the right things and where there genuinely can be competitive advantage, then we're just wasting time that we don't have. So yeah, Quick is still early stages, but I think it represents a bit of a shift in mentality, hopefully, and the creation of something that's, if we manage to pull it off, is here to stay and here to contribute to, you know, genuinely good jobs, decarbonisation, reduce waste, all these good things together. It's a bit of a no-brainer when it comes to circularity, but just one we've maybe not focused on as much as we should have for a long time.
In our Sustainability Leadership Manifesto, I argue that we need to get beyond the current focus on net zero. We need to develop and deliver initiatives that offer multiple benefits for people and nature. Initiatives that reduce carbon emissions, help us adapt to climate change, enable nature to recover and regenerate, enhance well-being, and increase the resilience of people, organisations and society. But how do you actually do that? How do you bring colleagues with you? What frameworks are helpful? This is the topic of our next roundtable on Wednesday, the 3rd of April. Whether you have experience to share or are looking for examples to learn from, or both, you're invited. The roundtable, Getting Beyond Net Zero, is on Wednesday, the 3rd of April at 12:30 UK time. Register via the link in the show notes. We'd love to have you with us. So I know a little bit about that story, obviously, because I was helping facilitate that one of those events. That was, but that wasn't the launch event, was it? Back in
that was the second event,
sort of. I can't remember what it was called, but yeah, basically sort of bringing that sort of initial group of people who were interested coming together. It was about, I think it's about sort of 60 or so people in the room, I think.
Yeah, you and Warwick did a brilliant job.
At the end of the workshop that we ran for Quick, a number of people asked our advice about facilitating these kinds of events. So we recorded an episode to explain the activities we used and the thinking behind our approach. The episode is called How to Facilitate a Workshop, a Case Story for Sustainability Managers. And there's a link in the show notes. I think it was, you know, it was really inspiring hearing from so many people, you know, talking about why they were there, why they thought it was important. And I, you know, obviously it has to stack up financially and all the rest of it, but it was really coming through quite clearly in my mind anyway. I am perhaps prejudiced to hear this.
We're doing it because it's important,
and we've got to find out how to make it work, rather than, you know, because there's an opportunity here, essentially.
Yeah, it's this kind of brilliant, you know, like we're delivering these dual outcomes of, you know, something that is genuinely the right thing to do for all these different reasons, but also can offer a commercial benefit to companies as well. Yeah. And you kind of think, well, you know, how can you say no to that, right? If it's, you know, what we found with working with renewable parts is, so this actually all stemmed out of us getting Your Gears.
In case you're wondering, the Your in Your Gears is spelt Y-A-W.
So a yaw gear, it essentially enables a turbine to move around, to either move into the wind or out of the wind, depending on what's needed at that time and depending on wind speeds. And what we found was essentially that a few years ago, there was a shortage of them. So we weren't able to get them for, I think it was about a 3-year wait time for yaw gears. And now this is something that if a yaw gear breaks, there'd usually be about, I think it's 8 per turbine. So if a yaw gear breaks, then you can't operate your turbine, right? And that's a significant, you know, loss in revenue. You're not generating renewable power, which means it needs to be supplemented by a different type of electricity onto the grids. So, you know, good reasons to get that back on as quickly as possible. And what we found was that was really kind of what drove the relationship with renewable parts in the first place. So we started to work with them, and over time what we found was we could buy our yaw gears from Loch Gilped in Scotland, a small town in Scotland, instead of getting them shipped over brand new from I think it's Bologna they come from. And as well as obviously supporting a local business, buying the refurbished version was cheaper. There was absolutely no, you know, like in terms of the quality control checks and everything like that, the exact same. You know, these pieces have been kind of re-engineered and evaluated and tested by renewable parts. There's a reduction in waste because obviously they're not, you know, if we have a broken yaw gear, we send it back to renewable parts, it doesn't get sent to scrap. It's carbon saving. You know, Renewable Parts are a wonderful local company that employs local apprentices and graduates and people from the local area. And then you're also not to that point around, you know, we've got finite resources. So you're not extracting brand new, you know, minerals, metals, whatever else as well. So yeah, we kind of set up this relationship. Now we're able to get yaw gears in a month. So the wait time is a month instead of it be a year now if we had to wait for buying brand new. So 11 months of more, you know, more generation as well, which is, kind of almost one of the most important things as well. So it's this, I guess, the start of a relationship. And now what we're looking to do is to extend that further. And actually, you know, we've got this wonderful engineer within our asset management team who, I mean, he just, the way he thinks is wonderful, just one of these kind of creative problem solvers. But he essentially has worked with renewable parts to actually re-engineer solutions so that the yaw gears stop breaking so often in the first place. And it's that kind of genuine collaborative relationship that, you don't get every day. So,
it's really easy to sit around, whether it's in a boardroom or in the pub, and come up with a great idea of, we're going to change the industry by doing X, Y, and Z. Yeah. you know, circular economy, like, brilliant. But okay, yeah, so you've not quite got there yet, but you're definitely making progress. You're bringing people on board. There's excitement. There's an energy. There's a momentum. I can really feel that in the room. I hope stuff's been moving on since then. But what has, what's from your point of view, what's enabled that to turn into something for real rather than remaining, a statement, a mission statement, and nothing really happens? What's driving it forward?
Probably it's that, this was a genuine gap. It was something like, there is a definite gap in the market for a solution. And you can hear, you sometimes hear in the energy industry people talking about local content and this idea that, we've missed our opportunity for manufacturing, building manufacturing capabilities within Scotland or the UK. I think if you rethink things for a second, then there's still massive opportunities. Our industry is still in its infancy, and these assets are going to be around for a very long time. So let's think about that supply chain that can exist and can be built for that operational period, as well as for the upfront manufacturing, which is of course very important. I think the core part of getting people on board is that this is something that everyone wanted, they just didn't know how to do it. And then I guess we just got on and started to do it, and we haven't worked out, we don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but we have, I think it feels like we've got the right partners involved. Mm-hmm. We've got a group of individuals and organizations, and the National Manufacturing Institute Scotland has been wonderful as well. You've got different perspectives. You've got University of Strathclyde giving us these, access to research findings. You've got Renewable Parts who have that direct experience of working, of seeing the demand, right? And a company like Renewable Parts is growing at some rate because they can see the demand there. And then you've got a company like ISTI Renewables, a large business that's calling for, you know, for this product, which doesn't quite exist yet in the supply chain. So I think it almost across those different groups, you could see that there was something out there that we didn't have yet. And the, yeah, it was a gap, right? And we filled the gap. And that's the easiest way, is that necessity breeds innovation, right? So we needed it and now we're going to do it.
Isn't that a great story? And of course, it's just the beginning for the Coalition for Wind Industry Circularity. What you've just heard is only the first half of my conversation with Kate. In the next episode, we shift topic to focus on one of the other big challenges facing Kate and the renewables industry. Before we close here, though, I'd like to pull out some of the threads that most struck me about how Kate and her collaborators across the industry are going about developing a circular economy for the sector. First, there's a real recognition that reducing resource use is the right thing to do. Not just from Kate, but I know from the people at the workshop that there was a real sense that this is a genuinely important initiative that people really care about. There's a real emotional engagement with the issue. Secondly, but like Bob Gordon said in the last episode, by itself, emotion isn't enough. You need a robust business case. And here, there was a really compelling business case due to the supply chain issues directly affecting revenue. And thirdly, people often say we don't need any emotional buy-in. The business case by itself is enough. Well, that's true up to a point in some circumstances. But if Kate and others behind Quick hadn't been emotionally committed to this, I strongly suspect the project wouldn't have gone beyond remanufacturing the yaw gears. As it is, their commitment and vision is building on this technical fix to create a collaboration that could radically reduce resource use and have a range of social and economic benefits right across the industry. And fourthly, collaboration is at the heart of this initiative and will be essential to its success. And for collaboration to work, there needs to be a real sense of shared purpose and a high level of trust. This was very much in our minds when Morag and I were creating the workshop for Quick. We gave a lot of thought to hosting the event in ways that helped people who hadn't been involved in the initial discussions not just to see the business benefits, but to also feel this was something they really wanted to be part of. And finally, this initiative really shows the importance of having tangible, practical things that you can get working on together right away and that deliver real results quickly. In this case, the focus on remanufacturing and extending the life of yaw gears. In the next episode, you'll hear more from Kate about collaboration when she talks about how industry-wide collaboration is going to be essential to tackle biodiversity in the renewable sector. I'm Osbert Lancaster, and I hope this episode of Leadership for Sustainability will help you lead on sustainability in your organisation. What you're doing is so important, now more than ever. Be sure to look after yourself. Bye for now.